You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation, brought to you by Go Wild. Go Wild is the fastest growing outdoor themed social media app on the market. All you have to do is go to wherever you download your apps and download Go Wild. And for more information, you can visit timetogowild.com.
My name is Clay Newcomb, and I'm the host of the Bear Hunting Magazine podcast. I'll also be your host into the world of hunting, the icon of North American wilderness, the bear. We'll talk about tactics, gear, conservation, but we'll also bring you into some of the wildest country on the planet, chasing bear.
Welcome to the Bear Hunting Magazine podcast. We are here at the global headquarters of Bear Hunting Magazine, Jedi's. Right outside, probably going to be barking a little bit. It is October 26th, and I have with me in the office two of my really good friends that have done a lot of stuff with me over the years. I got Brent Reeves here sitting at about 11 o'clock, and I got Ryan Greb sitting at about 1 o'clock. They're sitting pretty close to each other, awkwardly close. But
what time is it where you're sitting?
I'm right at 6.
Oh, okay.
But no, these guys traveled up. Brent traveled up from Central Arkansas. Ryan traveled up from Western Arkansas to meet here. And we're going to talk about Saskatchewan. What we're going to cover in this podcast is the last 3 years. Brent, Ryan, and I, and a conglomerate of other Arkansans and a Wisconsinite by the name of Mark Cuddyback, have traveled to Saskatchewan. Mark just the last 2 years, but all of us the last 3 years, we've traveled to northern Saskatchewan to hunt with Bear Pro Safaris and Colby Morrison. And this hunt has become something really unique for me. I mean, I get to travel a lot with Bear Hunting Magazine to a lot of different outfitters, and I hunt with some of the best outfitters in the world. I really do. The Saskatchewan hunt has become so fun primarily because of the boat ride on the first year, the 60-mile boat ride. Yep. So these are the iconic moments that have made Bear Pro Safaris what it is. The iconic boat ride, 60-mile boat ride in high water, high seas, the first year. And then the second year, 2017, the hunt for the color phase bear, which became a pretty well-known hunt because this bear came in, touched my arrow. Brent videoed it. The video, I think, has 1.6 or 1.7 million views on YouTube. But that hunt was like, as far as baited bear hunts go in the north, that was one of the most spectacular hunts of all time. Number one, I missed a huge, probably Boone and Crockett class bear with a trad bow.
He was big.
We saw, you rubbing the salt in still. We saw a boar breeding a sow. We had this big color phase bear come in and run these other bears off. And so Bear Pro Safaris to us is this unique, unique place. But before we get going with that, I wanna hear from you guys. So Brent W. Reeves.
Not even close.
Not even close. Brent's filmed with me for several years, written some articles for me, done some bear recipes. But Brent, tell us a little bit about yourself. That's such a dumb question.
Yeah.
Every podcaster asks it. Tell me about yourself.
Yeah, like you didn't already know. Oh, man. I grew up in South Arkansas and been in, career-wise, I guess, law enforcement for almost 28 years now. And got into the guiding business, the duck guiding business with my brother close to 30 years ago, I guess. And we retired from that, and I just got interested in filming, and I've been filming hunts, you know, all over. I've been fortunate enough to be taught by some really good videographers.
Me.
And then I've pretty well told Clay how to do everything. What Ryan didn't tell him
Yeah, that's right. I kind of started him at first. You finished him up.
So
it's true.
But it's just been a crazy trip, man, as far as what that camera has allowed me to do and the places I've got to go and the things I've got to see and the people that I've met. That was cool, you know. And you talk about that Saskatchewan the last 3 years. The first year, anytime people experience a near-death experience and all of them live through it, you know, you are brothers for life, whether it's combat or in a boat on whatever lake that was, Wollaston Lake, that tried to kill us in Canada.
Yes.
So it was
I was holding on to empty gas cans. Yes, yeah. Like thinking, when I end up in that water, I'm going to have my life vest and I'm going to have this jerry can, as the Canadians call it.
What you didn't know is I took the lids off of them before you grabbed them.
It was, you know, it was two boats, right? When you were in Kobe in one boat and it was three boats.
Three boats. So this was 2016.
Yeah.
First year we hunted. And so Colby's camp was on the backside of this lake.
The moon.
It was 55. It was 55 miles as the crow flies. And then, but we were hugging the inside bank of the lake because we couldn't get out in the middle. I don't know if y'all remember that.
Oh,
Colby said, it'll be a little bit longer of a boat ride today. We're going to have to stay close to the bank. And I was like, yep. We were all like, oh, okay, it's probably a 30 minute boat ride.
Yeah. No, man, I kept looking at my watch and my crucifix and it just kept there. It was long, man. It was the longest boat ride ever.
Raining. It wasn't pouring rain, but it was.
I was trying to fish, but we were running just a little too fast. Yeah,
he was trolling. He had his five of diamond spoon out the side trying to catch a pike.
It was
that scary. That year was iconic.
Yeah.
That year I killed a bear on the first day.
Yep.
I it was a nice bear. It was a Pope and Young bear.
First,
but it was not.
Minutes, maybe?
It was not the bear that you go to Saskatchewan to take. I mean, it was a good one.
Oh yeah.
Right. So you film me on that 2016. You
yep.
film me there.
Yep.
So we were done after one day. And then Ryan hunted, and you killed a bear on the fourth day.
It was the fifth day.
Fifth day.
We had
Brent
one more,
was with you.
Yeah, we had one more day to hunt, and Colby took us to a new place. It was raining, put a tarp over her head. I was kind of thinking this wasn't going to work. It sounded like popcorn popping above her head, hitting that rain, hitting that tarp. But we wasn't there, 30 minutes, and Boar and Sal come in. And we talked about it for a little bit, but we ended up taking the boar. And but anyway, it was a good hunt. We had a good time. The fishing was phenomenal. You know, the camp was exceptional, the food. And it was, I wish we could go back to that exact location. We didn't realize how spoiled or how well we had it that year.
Yeah. Hey, before we get too far off track, this was an introduction. So Brent Reeve was introducing himself. So you were talking, you talked about being a duck guide, being in law enforcement.
Yep.
You talked, then you transitioned into you've followed people around and filmed and hunted all over the place for the last couple of years.
Yep.
Well, not the last couple of years, last 10 years.
Yeah, about probably 15 years. I met a guy out in
they didn't even make cameras 15 years ago, Brent.
Well, that's where
VCR tape.
I was drawing on the side of a cave. That's where I started. But I was filming or hosting a film crew at my guide service, my brother's and I's guide service, and became friends with one of the videographers there, and that's how I got started. So it was by accident.
And then
but
your history with me is that probably 6-7 years ago with Arkansas Black Bear Association, which at the time I was running, you contacted me, and we just talked about filming bear here in Arkansas.
Yeah,
you ended up coming up to...
I remember I sent you an email, I think, and then I called you, and I was like, I told you what I was doing, that I was, you know, kind of a freelance videographer, and I'd like to come film you, and you were like, okay, whatever, and pretty much that was it. You hung up. You kind of blew me off there for that.
I did.
So I didn't figure I'd hear from you. And then the next year, next year you called and said, hey, man, come over here and let's do some filming. And taking you under my wing, and I can't count how many times I've saved your life, and I've been a big blessing to you, Clay. So that's
you know what you're saying is true. It's true. very good. So Ryan Grebb.
Enter Ryan Grebb.
Enter Ryan Grebb. Now let me give a little history on Ryan Grebb. Ryan Grebb, when I have a question about bear hunting in Arkansas, I call Ryan Grebb. Ryan Grebb, and I will, if this could be disproven, I would love for it to be. But I believe this is true, that nobody has killed more bear in terms of weight in Arkansas than Ryan Grebb. And I'm talking about collective weight, yep. Like however many bears you've killed.
Oh, shucks, Clay, you're making me blush.
I mean, Ryan kills a big bear almost every year. And when I say big, like, I don't know, you'd probably shoot a 300, and I think a few years ago you shot a 325, right, or something. Yeah. But usually you're killing bear over 400. The bear you killed this year weighed 385?
385.
And then a couple years ago you killed a 440. You've killed a 504-pounder. I mean, Ryan, we've been able to bait bears in Arkansas since 2001. And basically since then, Ryan's killed a bear almost every year. And so I consider Ryan Grebb a bear hunting expert. And then Ryan has also gone with me to Canada. Man, the first, when I acquired Bear Hunting Magazine in 2013, I got the magazine in July of 2013, and it all kind of happened really quick. And I contacted this outfitter up in Ontario, and he was like, yeah, come and hunt. I called Ryan and said, you want to go to Ontario? He was like, yep. So we jumped in the truck, drove to Ontario, and took about 3 days hunting within 50 yards of gravel roads.
Yep.
And we killed two bears, and the one that I killed was, I think, the biggest bear they had ever seen in the camp in their life. I mean, these guys were shocked when we showed them the bear. I mean, because Ryan and I, we were like, man, this is not good. I mean, Ryan could hear them, Jason Aldean playing in the
Actually, windows of the trucks by, and down. I could sing along what was on the radio.
I mean, they were close, so it was no wilderness hunt, but it was a super fun hunt. Anyway, we ended up both killing bears and good ones.
Yeah.
So that was our first like real outing, and ever since then, almost every time I've hunted in Canada, maybe not every year since then, you've gone with me to Canada. I think.
Yeah, almost. I didn't go the year y'all went to Alberta.
That's right.
I wish I'd win on that trip because y'all had big time success on that go around.
Oh yeah, that was. You're right.
I think every one of you guys killed a couple bears apiece, didn't you?
Yeah, that was since 14. Yeah, we killed six. Three of us killed six bears in a couple days. But so, tell us about yourself, Ron.
I've grown up in western Arkansas and kind of cut my teeth just bow hunting growing up, Fort Chaffee, you know, wildlife management
don't
area.
Don't tell them where you hunt, man.
Yeah, it's not a secret anymore. But
you killed all the big deer out of there.
Yeah, but anyway, just I own my own small business right now, but I'm fortunate to get out and hunt quite a bit. And I've met Clay back in, I guess, what, around 2010?
2010.
When you kicked off the Arkansas Black Bear Association. Yep. And fortunate to get to know Clay pretty good, and he invited me on several of these trips, and we've gotten to be pretty good friends over the years and talked.
I wouldn't go that far, but yeah.
Yeah. anyway, all these trips we go on, we've had a blast with the guys we've got to meet, and I get to aggravate Brent when he's there a lot of times. But also here hunting in Arkansas for bears and in Oklahoma, you know, we share some secrets and tips. And
yeah,
it seems like I'm always helping Clay get his animals out of the woods. But
it's true. But let me say something about Ryan. If Ryan does something, he is going to be really good at it. If he hand fishes for catfish, he and his crew are going to catch the biggest catfish. If he's deer hunting, he's going to kill a big deer. If he's bear hunting, he's going to kill a big bear. Ryan's just an all-around woodsman. and I have a ton of respect for him. And so it's been fun to travel.
Yeah, it has.
Yeah. Well, okay, so we got these guys introduced. And Ryan's been on a couple episodes of Bear Horizon. Brent's been on episodes of Bear Horizon. So Bear Horizon, for those of you who don't know, is our bear hunting show that's on Carbon TV. It's mainly on YouTube at this point. But this is our fifth year at Bear Horizon. So these guys have been on and off through there for a couple of years. But so now to the topic at hand is Saskatchewan.
Here we go.
And let me start off by, to somebody that doesn't know much about bear hunting, which us being from the South, 10 years ago, I didn't know a thing about spring bear hunting. It never really entered my mind other than I knew that I wanted to go. I knew that it would be fun. It was like, hey, it'd be fun one day to travel up north in the spring of all times and go on a big game hunt. I mean, that was like far off. And I just envisioned like maybe one day.
Yeah.
I'd go one time and kill a bear and just be, you know, have this great time. Well, now this is something that I'm doing every year. And to be able to hunt a big game animal in the spring with your bow in May and June is something that you don't get to do. There's a few sheep that you can hunt, but how many of us can afford to go on a sheep hunt?
Right.
In today's culture, with where guys are becoming more and more passionate about year-round hunting, I mean, used to when my dad, who was as hardcore a hunter as there was on the planet, man, he didn't start thinking about deer hunting until about September the 1st.
Right.
I mean, you just didn't do it. That's when you started shooting your bow. And then as I got a little bit older, they started shooting 3D archery tournaments in the 90s. And so it kind of became a little bit more of a year-round thing. But now hunting is like a year-round passion for all of us. We're thinking about it. We're on social media. We're yada, yada, yada. Well, that's where, to me, spring bear hunting plays in a major play for the hunters, and southern hunters even particularly, to be able to escape the heat of the South and go up north, to me, is something that
absolutely
would be hard to replace. It is so stinking cool to leave Arkansas in late June. That's when we go to Saskatchewan, late June, and travel 30 hours, whether by plane or whether we drive. Brent and I have driven the last 2 years. We'll talk about that. But get up there, and it's like, I mean, it's cool.
Well, you're building crisp. A fire. You know, everybody's sitting around a fire. We're headed in, you know, it's June, late June, almost as hot as it's going to get in Arkansas. And we're packing our winter clothes to go hunting in Saskatchewan.
Your little pink Union suit that you bring every year. You look really cute.
I've got it on now. Just in case we were going to go up there today.
So, to me, that's one, back to the point here, fellas, that's one of the coolest things about that is being able to just leave here and go there. The last 2 years, Brent and I have driven. It's 30 hours up to northern Saskatchewan. And we usually break up the trip. We stop in North Dakota.
And fight.
What are we doing? You know what? I tell you what. This is like really neither here nor there. But on the way back. Okay. On the way there. Okay. When you get into Canada. And Southern Canada is like these big crop fields and flat. And it's like, to me, the color of the sky kind of changes. It's, and like you feel like you're there.
It's so nothing
the
next, like you think.
Like the next 10 hours, it's like you're home.
Yeah.
On the way back home, when I feel like I'm home, is when I get to Kansas City.
Yeah.
And then you start driving and you start seeing all these like, what am I trying to say? All these like Ozarkian restaurants. Like I just feel like I'm home. We stopped at a little gas station on the way back. When we stopped at that little, the little like Cracker Barrel looking.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, we're home. Road trip, 30 hour road trip.
Back. Yeah, when you can get Chester chicken.
And the
gas station, you're home.
Tea. Yeah,
sweet tea. Lord, don't get me started about sweet tea.
Yeah.
That is an anomaly if you can find it anywhere.
Yeah.
Very overseas.
Yeah. So spring bear hunting is truly unique. So when we go up to northern Canada and Saskatchewan, the cool thing about what Colby's doing is that his hunts are boat-based hunts.
Yeah.
So he's on these big water systems in the lakes up in Canada. This wouldn't be, it's kind of unique because these lakes and rivers kind of like flow, well, the rivers flow into the lakes. And then just on the backside, the river flows right out of the lake. So you never really know if you're in a lake or a river. I mean, even though they're named typically, but these big water systems. And some of these lakes are going to be huge. I mean, like 50, 60 miles across in the case of where we hunted the a few years before.
Yeah, when, you, when you're on a lake and you can't see the bank either side, that was what was foreign to me. Because it's it's nothing. When you said we're going to be hunting lakes and river system, it's nothing like what I had pictured in my mind. Was it you?
Now, not seeing another boat, it's like you're the first people to ever be on that water. There's there's nobody. It's, you know, it's like a different planet out there.
Yeah.
You actually feel alone. I mean, if something happens, you're thinking, how am I going to get out of this?
Nobody's going to come find me.
Yeah, I'm done.
Now, so on the road trip up there, we actually, we drive north until the pavement ends, I guess around Mississippi.
Yeah.
The little community of Mississippi.
In Saskatchewan.
Or is it LaRange, where the pavement ends in LaRange.
Yeah.
LaRange, Saskatchewan. You can look it up. And then from there, there's, it's 250 miles of dirt roads to get where we turn off to go to Colby's camp.
Yeah.
And from his camp, we access boats and travel up and down waterways as far as 22 miles any direction. The first year that we hunted there, Brent and I got in a boat. And we would travel 22 miles to our bait site by water,
camp.
Which took about an hour.
Yeah.
You know, he's running, I don't remember what horsepower motors, 45 horse?
45 horse and 40 horsepower.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you can, you know, we're traveling about 20 miles an hour. So it's not a bass boat traveling 70. Anyway, long boat rides. But so.
Every day.
But what he's able to do by getting that far north is he's able to access unhunted bears. I mean, I deal with a lot of Canadian outfitters through Bear Hunting Magazine, and what Canada has that we don't have is truly massive, massive amounts of true wilderness. And by true wilderness, I mean places where there are non-vehicular, no roads that a vehicle can drive down.
Man, there was places up there that we were walking and scouting that I would, you know, you get the impression you may be the only person that's made a track in there.
Totally untapped resources up there.
Yeah.
You know, there's only a couple roads that actually,
I mean, the
go that
dirt road that we were on was the only north-south road for like 60 or 70 miles.
Yeah.
Like to the east or to the west.
Yeah. So, I mean, this, you're completely remote when he takes us to these places.
Listen to this. The Jim Sessions told me that in the United States, the furthest that you can get from a road and be sitting in wilderness, and as the crow flies, the closest road, like the furthest you can get away from a road is 36 miles. And it's in it's near the headwaters of the Yellowstone River in Wyoming. And so if that's 36 miles.
Right.
Okay. In Canada, places like that are everywhere.
Yeah, that's
a
town.
90% of 90% of the population of Canada lives within 100 miles of the U.S. border. I've heard that statistic before.
Yeah.
And then Canada goes forever north. I mean, it's a huge country, and there's just nobody that lives up there.
Yeah, well, you think also, you know, not only roads – I think back over the last 3 years, and I've been keeping up with it. Man, I paid attention to it. You don't see a commercial jet fly over.
No. Yeah.
If you see an airplane there, an aircraft of any kind, it's got floats on it, and it's taking somebody fishing. It's
and that was rare.
Yeah.
Hey, when I was in Alaska, talking about wilderness, when I was in Alaska, I've been to Alaska twice, South Central Alaska. You'll have flown into this river system in Alaska. You boat-based hunt there as well. And there is hardly a moment when you cannot hear a bush plane flying overhead.
Right.
I mean, I'm serious. Like, in all the videos and stuff I do, you can't hardly talk for all the bush planes.
I was there 2 years ago. Same,
it's a little distracting because you're having this wilderness experience and constantly Bush planes. And, I mean, that's the method of travel in Alaska.
Right.
And the time of year that I was there was when a lot of people were hunting. So it was a busy time. But, I mean, it was like you were in the wilderness. Yeah, you were probably the only one within miles of where you were sitting on the ground. But in the air, there were planes all over the place.
It's not like
and
that.
Not taking anything away from Alaska. But, by golly, the most remote place I have ever set foot was the first year, 2016, when we drove the boat 60 miles to the camp.
By
I mean,
far.
And that's when you or somebody brought up, hey, there's not even commercial airlines flying over.
Yep,
and,
exactly.
And, I mean, that was true wilderness.
Yep.
True wilderness. And that's a commodity that, I mean, as we continue to move into the current time that we do with the encroachment of civilization, the loss of habitat, urban sprawl, populations of humans are increasing. It's like wilderness is really something that is valuable. It's valuable to humans, valuable to wildlife, valuable to the planet. Anyway, to go on a spring bear hunt in northern Canada, you get to partake of that.
Yeah, that's I just mean, it's one, like, one piece of the puzzle.
Absolutely. You get to partake of that. And there's also something really unique about being really familiar with the world that you live in, like all of us are outdoorsmen, and I mean, we're connoisseurs of this Arkansas outdoor life that we live. We really are.
Right.
And to go up there and to really know nothing, you know what I mean? Like, I'm asking Colby, like, what kind of tree is that? Right. I mean, like, I feel like the city people that, you know, come with me somewhere and they see a white oak and are like, what kind of tree is that?
Oh, all you know, three of us have spent our whole lives in the woods and gone, you know, adventures hunting or whatever, but that place up there is like testosterone and steroids out of baby. I mean, you can't describe it really.
And it is not majestic beauty. Like, I've had a lot of people say, well, is it beautiful up there in northern Saskatchewan? It's absolutely beautiful. It is not majestic beauty. Majestic beauty would be, I would define it like Rocky Mountain beauty, big grand vistas and rock formations and stuff that's just really, really visually appealing. This to me is like a rugged, nuanced beauty. Yeah. And the beauty is in the fact that there's this massive expanse of wilderness. But what you typically have on the ground is that reindeer moss. Is that what they call it?
Yeah, lichen stuff.
It's lichen. I mean, it's like white. It's almost like you're walking on the moon.
Right. Yeah.
And
kind
then jack pines, which are these small coniferous trees, evergreen. The biggest they get is about 6 inches at the base. Part of the reason we hunt on the ground up there.
Yeah, because the trees ain't big enough to get. I guess you could maybe lean a ladder stand on some of them, but
yeah, it'd probably bend over.
Yeah, if the wind blows, you'll be swaying back and forth for sure.
Yeah, you couldn't make pulpwood out of that stuff up there. I mean,
and that is the northern boreal forest.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the boreal forest, and those trees grow for like 4 months a year. I mean, that's, I guess technically because they hold their needles throughout the winter, they actually are doing a little photosynthesis throughout the winter. But, I mean, the reason that those trees don't get big is because they don't grow. They're designed to live in heavy snowfall. And so, to me, the beauty, the appreciation of that place is realizing that every critter that's here is an extreme survivalist.
Yeah, they're
I mean,
tough.
Like, down here where we live in these kind of mild latitudes, like, you got a pretty big leeway of ecological niche that you can live in, if I could describe it that way. I mean, like, there's specialists here, but, like, not that specialist in terms of, like, how an animal adapts. But, man, when you get up that far north and you got to go through 8 months of hard winter, 7 months of hard winter, 5 feet of snow.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot that can live.
Well, there's four things.
Right.
There are four big game animals in northern Saskatchewan. Black bear, moose, caribou, and wolf.
Yeah, and that's it.
That is it. Now, there's some small game species, but, I mean, that's all that's there. And what is the king of the North Woods? Trick question. Bears.
Always.
I mean, they dominate the landscape. I mean, the moose populations, moose is a low-density animal.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't see a lot of moose. The caribou up in that part of the country, Colby says, are rare.
Yeah, they hardly ever see them.
Yeah. And now wolves, now that's a different story, but there's more bears than wolves. But if you were just doing a population density, the northern woods, black bear is the dominant animal.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it.
Way, way more bears than, you know, people probably could even imagine up there.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt.
Have you done any research to what the population density is in that area?
No, I don't know the specifics of that.
Or even if they have a way to know.
Well, some of these bears that Colby's hunting right now are collared. They're doing a study up in that part of the world right now. And I guess it's a population study, but I don't know the details of it. But, you know, population densities of bear, that's a good question. Like, a high population of bears is one bear per square mile.
Right.
High population of deer is like 45 deer per square mile. So when we say, oh, man, there's a high population of bears there, we say that relative to other things. Like, you know, I mean, a high density of bears in Arkansas is like one bear per square mile, which that's a good bear population. And it's actually the same up there, right. If not even – there's just so much ground that, you know, there's bears are spread out. And bears are low-density animals.
Right.
They're not like white-tailed deer. They're not not a herd animal, you know. They're not gregarious.
Right.
But there's a ton of bears up there. And we see exaggerated – our situation is a little exaggerated in that we're hunting baited bears. So these bears are coming in from a lot of different places, you know.
But those bears don't act like they do in Arkansas either.
No.
Well, these bears, too, are – places Colby's accessing that has probably never been hunted, never been baited. In fact, next year he's going to a totally different water system that's probably never been bear hunted before ever.
Yeah, you know, that's something that was hard for me to grasp when you told me how big the area is that he hunts. And yeah. It was...
I can't even remember, to be honest with you.
It was over 100,000 square miles. And it may have been twice that much.
Yeah.
It was
more than an outfitter could hunt.
Oh gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
In a lifetime.
Yeah. And so I'll say, in as this pertains to other Canadian outfitters, Colby is not unique in that situation. Mm. I mean, these Canadian outfitters have vast areas that they can hunt. And most of them, a lot of them, are the only people that are hunting them. I mean, so you know, just as a plug for other outfitters as well. There's a ton of outfitters that have some crazy good wilderness
and
hunting.
There's only certain ways to access a lot of this. A lot of it, there's no way to get in there to hunt it.
Yeah, you couldn't drive.
Yeah.
You couldn't drive. You could fly in a float plane. Everything in Canada is accessed by water because they're, you know, it's a glacial formed region. So there, I mean, you look at a aerial photo. Or satellite photo on Google Earth of any of those Canadian provinces, and it is littered, I mean littered, with lakes, river systems, unbelievable amount of water is flowing out of Canada.
Yeah.
And so that's the way they get in there. They don't have dirt roads, that just little pig trails that go every direction up there. Yeah. So we have established that this is a wilderness hunt.
Yep.
That being said, we drive to our camp. The last 2 years, we've driven our pickup trucks right to camp.
Yeah.
This year, we stayed in wall tents. The year before, we stayed in these little wooden takedown cabins that Colby made. And the government actually wouldn't let him use those this year because of fire danger. And they were afraid those things would burn. And he needed to be able to evacuate quickly. So they said, you can't have those semi-permanent structures. And so we had wall tents. We do drive right into camp, and then we take the trucks down to a boat ramp and get in there and go hunting. Talk a little bit about the schedule of the hunt, Ryan, kind of like a daily routine that we would do.
Well, you know, it's you get up there and it don't get – I guess it don't get dark completely, but probably the darkest it gets is 2 o'clock, and the sun's rising by three in the morning. So kind of messes your mental state up, you know, trying to sleep when there's daylight, you know, coming through the tent wall. But, you know, we sleep in the mornings, eat some breakfast, and we'll get out, you know, late morning. do a little fishing, and the fishing is spectacular. Most of these places, fish don't know what baits are. Yeah. They've never seen tackle.
Yeah.
But, you know, do fishing, have a good time, hang out with the guys, come back, eat, you know, lunch, noonish or so, and then we'll have a little, seem like, bow shoot and make sure everybody's, you know, on target, and we gather our stuff, and off we go, you know, in the trucks to get down where the boats are parked. And, you know, some guys ain't got as far as boat ride, but some of us are going, seem like, to the other side of the earth to get to some of these.
Yeah, I mean, some of the really good baits are within 2 or 3 miles of where we're putting
right.
them. So it's not always, there's not necessarily a correlation with the big bears are way back there. You
right.
know? I mean.
But the thing is, Kobe goes up there in the off season too, and looks for these places where bears naturally travel. I mean,
yeah.
some of these places bears have used for generations that are beat down, like these narrow razorback ridge tops.
Yeah.
Will have a game trail on it that is beat down like, you know, deep trenches.
Yeah.
And, you know, bears travel them a lot. Sometimes they're in pinch points, you know, around the end of a lake or between a marsh
right.
and a ridgetop or something. But
yeah.
He strategically puts these baits where guys can, you know, have good
right.
success.
You know, and that's a key right there. Nothing about what he's doing is based on convenience.
No.
I mean.
No.
He wants to see his hunters, you know, shoot bears.
Yeah.
He loves that.
And I thought it was, it's interesting, and I've tried to pry as much as I could out of Colby about how he chooses where his bait sites are. He tries to spread them out, I've noticed, at least 3 to 5 miles apart.
Right.
That seems to be the trend. And he likes putting these baits on in areas where there are bear trails, and there are bear trails up there.
Right.
I mean, which yep. you don't see that much around here. And, he puts them, like, on waterways. You know, these bears, there's creeks that are, you know, smaller feeder creeks that are running into these lakes and rivers, and he'll put baits up these creek systems. There, even though it's relatively flat there, there is some topography. There's some, you know, small rises, kind of rolling hills.
I'm glad you mentioned that. He told me that he looks at contours,
yeah.
topo maps, and he will follow a contour, too, in a lot of those game trails. Bear trails, whatever you want to call them. I mean, they look like a, for the folks that haven't seen it, it looks like a cow trail in a pasture. I mean, there's,
yeah.
there's, it is flat, beat out, and it's dirt, and it's as wide, you know, 8, some of them 10 inches wide, and beat down. And it's, when you think about the 4 big animals that you said that live there, how long and how old are those trails
well,
there?
You said 100 years.
Yeah.
I mean, 10,000.
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah.
I mean, basically, the current time frame that we live in, you know, 10,000 years ago was when the Ice Age kind of turned, you know, the Pleistocene turned into the modern era.
Exactly.
The glaciers retreated. All the current animals that we have in North America, all of a sudden were here. You know, not really all of a sudden, but they were here. So, I mean, yeah. So, these, not much has changed in the last 10,000 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
You know.
And this is an unaltered, I don't want to interrupt you, but let me just say this. And then, this is an unaltered ecosystem. Like, down here, there is no such thing as an unaltered ecosystem.
Nothing is the same as it was.
Yeah.
50 years ago.
I mean.
Much less 10,000.
That's what's cool about these kind of hunts.
Yeah. I was just going to say. You know, some of these baits, they'll, you know, drop the first guy off while we're waiting. You know, we'll throw a cast rod out just where he pulled the boat up and catch 4 or 5 pike just within 5 or 6 minutes, or, you know, walleye or something. It's just,
yeah.
you don't find that down here where we're at,
right.
you know.
Right.
True wilderness up there.
Yeah. And that's what you got to appreciate. And there's all different factors of these hunts that give them value. Like, if you're whitetail hunting in the Midwest, I mean, you're not really,
wilderness is not really what you're valuing on that hunt. You're valuing white-tailed deer and his antlers and big bucks.
Right.
When you go to Canada on a baited hunt, it's not a typically a test of physical endurance. It's not like a Rocky Mountain elk hunt where really the limiting factor and the thing you're after is you know, testing yourself up against this mountain. Like every hunt has this angle that makes it valuable. When I hunt right here close to my house, I love it, not because I have trophy deer right here. I love it because I walk out of my house, tell my kids bye while they're playing basketball, jump in my truck, drive a minute, get out of my truck and go hunt and be home at dinner.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, so that hunt has value to me. This hunt has value because of wilderness. It's not a technical hunt. I mean, and I want to talk a little bit about hunting bears over bait because it's massively misunderstood, even in the hunting community. People are like, ah, hunting bears over donuts. Man, don't knock it till you tried it. Come hunt with us and tell us that it's like hunting bears in a, you know, I mean, it's a unique hunt, and it's not just for the kill that makes it unique.
Well, I had a different opinion of it only because I had never done it. It wasn't a bad opinion. You know, I'm not against it at all. Wasn't against it at all.
Right.
But I thought, you know, how easy can that be? It's like catching catfish in the bathtub. Not that I have catfish in the bathtub.
It allows you to be selective on animals.
Yep.
You know, too, them bears up there don't know what we are or we pose any threat. So
yeah,
you can sit back and watch bears for days and most of the time and try to, you know, wait on that bear that you're looking for.
Right. And that's a massive key for hunting over bait. It allows you to be highly selective. Highly selective. And that's a key for conservation. That's a key for all kind of different stuff. But I was just building this episode of Bear Horizon, which will probably be out about the time this podcast comes out. So go to Bear Hunting Magazine YouTube channel and check it out. Brent Reeves and I, we watched more bear behavior in 6 days of bear hunting up there than the average hardcore woodsman will see in a lifetime. Probably three lifetimes.
And six times as much as we did in the last 2 years up there.
Yeah, because we hunted like 2 days.
Yeah.
No, that's the key feature of this video, and you hadn't even seen it yet. We got to watch it. It finished exporting here. Is that we saw bears breeding, bears fighting, bears interacting with us, bears doing everything that bears do. And there is no other big game hunt where you get to watch and see animals for as long a period of time at close distance. And I mean, when I say close distance, I mean like 10 yards on the ground.
Oh, yeah.
Not looking through a fence. I mean, like, there is no other big game hunt that is like this. And so that is an angle into this baited thing that a guy's got to look at. Like, if you're trying to evaluate, you know, a hunt, man, whitetail deer hunting, I love it. I absolutely go bonkers over it.
Right.
And always have and always will. Man, that big buck, when I see him, typically I'm watching him for a very short period of time.
Yeah.
I mean, he enters my life for like seconds before hopefully I'm able to harvest him or not. Last year, I didn't even see a shooter buck.
Right.
This year, I've encountered one, and we won't talk about that. But
spoiler alert.
What I'm saying is that these baited hunts are really unique. You get to watch these animals.
Yeah.
And man, there's something that you just you come away with a deep appreciation when you get to watch them.
Yeah, we were on like day four or five. I can't remember. And we had bears continue. There was 1 hour maybe when we were on bait that we didn't have bears out in front of us. And it wasn't the bear that you wanted to shoot. I can remember making you laugh. You turned around and looked at me at one point, and I just said, boring. I didn't mean it. I was just trying to be funny.
We got tired of watching bears.
But it was I don't know, man. It was like watching Channel 2 for a while there.
Well, because it was this is a good place to actually talk about the specifics of our hunt. So Brent was with me. Brent was filming. We hunted for 5 days.
Colby took us down a creek. And when I say a creek, it was like 7 yards wide, like a small creek.
You didn't go down it. You went left and right.
Yeah. Oh, man. Look at the drone footage, and you'll see what we're talking about from the video. But Colby, and this was a pretty unique bait. There was a creek that was navigable. Is that a good word?
It is.
I didn't quite say it right.
Close.
About 5 miles, he could take his boat, his inflatable boats. Oh, geez. We got to talk about his boats. We got a lot to talk about here.
Magic card.
And so we went 5 miles. It took 45 minutes of just zigging and zagging and dodging limbs. And we went way back in here to this bait. He had as far as you could take the boat. Brent and I hunted there for 5 days. And within 10 seconds of us sitting down the first day, two bears were coming.
Coming in.
And that was a trend every single day. When we sat down, and you'll see it in the video, every time I do my interview, first day, because we did it real strategically this time. Every single day I did. It's day one. This is what's happening. Day two, day three, day four, day five. That's how the video lines out. Every single one of those clips, there's a bear within 10 yards of me while I'm talking.
Yeah, and it wasn't like we were just, you know, messing around, getting ready. We were, you know, we were.
Oh, son, we would sit down. And I mean, scramble to get our gear out.
Because we knew what was coming.
We knew what was coming, and I just knew that you know, probably the big shooter was going to walk in.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, we would just scramble, get everything together, and man, the bears would be there. And we watched bears for 8 hours a day for 5 days.
Every day.
I mean, there was hardly was there a two-hour section where there wasn't a bear in front of us?
And I just said just a few minutes ago, I don't think there was an hour that there wasn't bears in front of us.
It's true. That bait was phenomenal in terms of seeing bears. I think maybe the most bears we saw in a day would have been like 7 or 8.
Yeah.
This was also a brand new bait. It had never been hunted. We started
it 3 weeks ago.
Right.
3 weeks before.
Before we got there.
Yeah. So these bears have never been hunted. They
probably never. Colby was probably the first human they ever smelled.
Yeah.
So we're hunting off the ground. We're just immediately just bears all around us. And so it's late June, the bear rut. Okay. Typically, oh man, we could get into a big deal about the bear rut. Bears have a unique reproductive methodology called delayed implantation, which means the sows get bred in the summer, but they don't start gestation until the winter or early winter, late fall, once their bodies have decided whether they can rear young or not. Bears are low density animals, so they need this big long window of ovulation and ability to breed. So the sows come in like a whitetail rut. A doe is in heat for like 3 days,
right?
Because she's got to bam get bred so that fawn is born at the exact time for highest probability of fawn survival.
Right.
A bear, low density animal, if a bear had a sow bear had a 3 day heat, she may not get bred. So they have these longer heats, long spans of time they get bred, and so everything about a breeding cycle has to do with fawn arrival or cub arrival in this situation, right?
Right.
So when that animal is going to pop out. Well, they bears regulate when their cubs are born because that fertilized egg doesn't attach to the uterine wall until a specific time, usually in early November. And the cubs are born hairless, under a pound, in the den in January. Bizarre. You couldn't have thought that up if you were writing a science fiction novel.
I'm trying to forget it now.
Yeah. So really that brings up, I'm taking a long road here, boys, to say that June 26th is definitely in the window of bear breeding.
Oh, sure.
So all these bears are at this bait. And Brent and I just know that any day, any hour, any second, for 5 days, we just know the next flash of fur that we see is going to be this tank boar that we've come to Saskatchewan to hunt.
Yeah.
That in itself, for it being extended that long a time, was worth the price of admission.
Oh, yeah. I mean, You were fueled up before we ever got in the boat to get there. I mean, because you just knew today was the day.
Yeah, we just knew.
Because we've seen it before.
Yeah.
We've seen it happen. We've seen it happen fast there. You know, we got spoiled the first 2 years we hunted up there.
We killed on the first day the first 2 years we were there.
Yep.
Yep.
And target and, you know, the big, the color face bear that we killed last year up there. I mean, that was a bear wasn't even on the, hadn't, they didn't even have pictures of.
Right, he just showed up.
Just showed up. So that's the experience that we were looking, you know, to repeat.
Yeah, and the logistics of this bait, Colby didn't have a camera out at the time. Just the logistics of it, and it's hard to understand, but it was. So we put up a camera when we got there. Almost all Colby's baits have cameras on them. Yep. This one didn't. So we didn't know exactly what was coming in there, but there were so many bears. I mean, it was just like, there's for sure a shooter boar coming in here. Within... First day when we get there, one of the first bears that is there within 10 seconds of us sitting down is a nice color face bear.
Beautiful.
That probably most bear hunters wouldn't have passed. I mean, it was a – I don't even want to say the size of it because I don't know. I mean, it was a – that weight really isn't how you evaluate these spring bears because they're thin. They're coming out of
he
the
dens.
He was
tall. Long-legged. You can see it on the video.
Probably a – 4-year-old boar, 3 to 4-year-old boar. Yeah. I mean, nice bear. Beautiful, like blaze orange color.
Yep.
You guys have to watch this video again. He's so pretty.
Yeah.
So this bear comes in like right off the bat, and we basically watch this bear every day for 5 days. And we just keep waiting, and the big boar just doesn't come. Doesn't come, doesn't come, doesn't come. And it doesn't really make sense because the place is covered in sows. And we saw 3 different color face boars that were just, I mean, just right. And I have very high standards when it comes to bear hunting. I mean, I do. And so if I was just wanting to take home a good boar, I could have easily done it
the first day.
But I was waiting for a tank. So I went up there. And... It didn't come, and that's just hunting, that's just part of it. It wasn't. Everybody was seeing, not everybody. We were seeing big bears. Ryan ended up killing a big bear. Spoiler alert: we're gonna get to him. And just to cut to the chase of what happened to me is on the final day. Well, on day 4, Brent, I actually said I'm not gonna shoot that bear today, but I might tomorrow. And what was also in the back of my mind was Brent had a tag. And if I killed early, Brent was going to get to hunt. And so in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, I'd like to get this done. That wasn't why I shot
the
bear.
That was in the front of my mind. That was in the front of my mind for him to hurry up and get it done.
Yeah. And so anyway, the final day, after watching this bear all week, shooting a traditional bow, shooting a takedown recurve, 52 pounds, 28 inches. Man, with a traditional bow, you just can't take anything for granted.
Absolutely.
Nothing. I mean, and that to me is the way that I have balanced the scales in some way. Every hunt that I do, there's an angle in my mind that I want to limit myself. And on baited bear hunts in Canada, typically, I do it with a traditional bow.
Yep.
It's just the way I want to roll. It's just what I want to do. In Oklahoma 2 weeks ago, when I killed the big bear, I did not want the weapon to be the limiting factor of that hunt.
Right.
The limiting factor of that hunt was just getting that bear in front of you.
Yeah.
So some people are like, why don't you use a trad bow, Clay? Man, I love trad bows, and that's my primary weapon right now. But every hunt has a little different angle. And that's the beauty of hunting is you can cherry pick where you want the limiting factor to be.
Yeah.
And so shooting a trad bow, and hey, I made a bad shot on the bear. I mean, what was so hard was that we'd watched this bear for so long. It was such an easy shot, probably 10 yards. And the truth is I was, we can watch the video again. I hit the bear at the back edge of the scapula, which is the shoulder. So I hit him about 3 inches high and just slightly forward. And if it had been lower, it would have
been perfect. Really, it was only about that far high. You guys will have to watch the shot. But I smacked that bear right in the shoulder, and he ran off with my arrow. And the bear is still out there being a bear today.
Yeah,
I mean, it didn't get any penetration. It just stuck in that scapula. And, man, I got to say all the things that I got to say here. It was a terrible experience. Made me evaluate all the different things that, was I practiced up? Was I ready mentally? And all those questions, it all just boils back down to just human error.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't win them all. I'd actually been on an amazing traditional archery streak. That was the first bear I've ever shot and not recovered, ever.
Yeah, I remember us talking about that.
One bear in all these years of bear hunting, I've never lost a bear. And actually been on a tremendous streak with whitetails and bears with a trad bow. And this is what I told Misty, my wife. I said, if you ride bulls, you're going to get your teeth knocked out.
Right.
If you shoot a traditional bow, you're going to miss stuff. It just comes with the turf.
It was a roller coaster, you know, that whole time we sat there. And when it comes in and you decide, okay, we're going to do it, you know, and we're rolling video, and man, it is some of the best stuff I've ever shot. And it was from all the different actions and of the bears that we got, bears being bears, and then we decided to, you know, pull the pin on this thing and get it done. And it just didn't work out. It was, it makes you appreciate more the times that we had before, the success we had before, because, you know, we appreciate, I think about those hunts all the time and how much fun we had and the interaction we had with each other and the bears. But even though the kill is not the reason you travel up there, you know, it's everything combined,
right.
But it was, you know, it was a letdown, and it was
a letdown.
It was a life lesson and a hard one.
Yeah.
But the reason you can't appreciate the good unless you get some of the bad.
Yeah. Well, the year before that also, everybody in camp, I mean, it
was done.
Yeah, everything worked. Everybody
killed five bears and I think 3 days.
The weather was great, yes. I mean,
it really made you appreciate how good the hunting was before.
Right. And the hunting was excellent this time. You know, and, you know, sometimes the shot just...
We struggled.
Right. So.
Well, listen to this. You know the old adage, and I've heard it in a few places even in the last few days on social media. Don't take anything. Don't shoot anything on the first day.
Right.
Wait. Is that right? Don't shoot anything on the first day you wouldn't take on the last.
No, don't pass.
Don't pass anything on the first day you wouldn't shoot on the last.
Yeah.
I passed this bear on the first day. Shot him on the last day. And I walked away with a bad taste in my mouth from that. I truly did. It just didn't feel right. And I kind of evaluated my motivations for shooting that bear. You know, it really wasn't what I came up there to shoot. And I shot him, and it didn't turn out right. And let me tell you how I applied this into my life later. Is the exact same thing happened in Manitoba in August. Is that I, on the first day of the hunt, first day I hunted, I filmed the guy the first day. I had a color phase bear come in that probably two people in North America would have passed.
You was one of them.
Me and Ryan. No, I was waiting. I really wanted a big, heavy, like 400-plus-pound fall bear.
Right.
This bear was gorgeous, and I passed him on the first day. And then, because I felt like the hunt was going to be pretty easy, we're seeing a lot of bears. And anyway, the last day came, and the outfitter was like, that bear is coming in there. He's still there. If you want to go hunt him, you can. And I knew that if I went in there, I would shoot that bear. And it was a bear that anybody would have been proud of. And I actually regretted not shooting him on the first day, okay? But because of that Saskatchewan deal, I said, no, I ain't even going back in there. put me over on this other place we hadn't even been, where there was a bear that I really wanted, the type of bear that I really wanted to hunt was there. And I went over there to that bait the final day of the Manitoba hunt, sat there and never saw the big bear. Came home without it, with a tag in my pocket. And so I actually felt good about that. I really did.
It kind of evened it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It did. It felt good to come away losing, because I lost twice. I mean, I went to Saskatchewan, came home with a tag in my pocket, went to Manitoba, passed bears, was playing it conservative.
Yeah.
Came home with a tag in my pocket. So, man, it's no fun coming back from – I've rarely come back from Canada with a tag in my pocket.
Yeah. Well, that is not the the primary goal, I guess, is to go up there and feel one. So it is a sobering event.
Yeah.
To come back with it. But, what's good about that, it was your choice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you made that decision, and for whatever reason, internally, you know, you filled your tag.
Yeah.
Your conscience tag, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
You did that, so.
Yeah.
You didn't come home empty-handed.
Truth be known, he's probably so nervous he just couldn't pull back. And
I was nervous. Brent will tell you, my legs were shaking.
Yeah, it was, and I think that had a lot to do with it. I really do, man. I really think, because I've seen you snap shoot at bears before, and it is just money.
Yeah.
I've seen you, 3 yards, it's hard to miss one at 3 yards.
Yeah.
But at 25 yards, when you shot that bear the second time last year.
Right.
I mean, it was it's 10 rings.
It's definitely easier to shoot when your brain doesn't have time to catch up with your,
right.
The mechanics of your physical body. Like just to shoot, bam, and that's a big factor. And that's what I'm like in traditional archery, you go through these stages, and I kind of felt like I was on the honeymoon stage the last 3 years.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the big
everything.
Deal?
You were smoking everything.
What's the big deal?
Yeah.
And then now I'm getting a little bit panicky when a deer walks up or a bear walks up. Because of partly for missing that bear in Saskatchewan,
well,
but that is the beauty of traditional archery. I mean, if I didn't want the weapon to be my limiting factor, I'd be shooting the compound bow.
Yeah,
and that's just the game I want to play right now. And it may change.
Just because you would have had a compound, don't mean you would have killed it off.
That's true.
That's
true.
Right. You got slapped in the face with a dead rat of reality up there. You can still feel it.
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, it anything could happen with any weapon. So that's what I'm working on. What I learned up there from that miss was I really have to pick a spot. That's so easy to say.
Yeah.
It's so easy to say, pick a spot.
Aim small, miss small.
Man, you got to have a machine for a brain to pick a spot when you shoot an animal with a traditional bow.
Yeah.
And I'm still learning how to do that. I'm still learning
focus.
How to do it.
You just gotta focus.
Now, going back to me being nervous, like the anticipation of seeing this bear walking, and we watched it for 30 minutes before I took the shot.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, I was nervous as a cat. And I tell you what, I do love that I still get excited when I shoot a bear. And
well, you also add in the fact that regardless of the outcome, the world is going to know one way or the other because I'm sitting back there with the camera filming the whole thing.
And as soon as I did it, I knew that I could not make an episode about it.
Yeah.
I knew that I could not, had to come out with it and hopefully somebody will learn something from this. And nothing else, just
it is
reality.
What it is.
Make fun of you about it.
Anyway. Yeah. Yeah. So 2 days ago, 2 days ago.
Yeah. Let's talk about that.
Oh, man. 2 days ago, I missed a whopper whitetail buck. A good one. I mean, not like a 150, but for around here, a good one. Best deer I've missed in a long time. I will stand by my statement that I believe I hit really close to where I was aiming. Just the deer wasn't there when the arrow got there. I text Ryan and Brent and tell them I miss. And I made the statement on text. I said, man, I watched that deer for 20 minutes before I shot. And Brent goes, you're not very good if you have time to think about it.
Yeah, I've noticed that you don't perform real well.
And that
pressure.
Is when I drew the line in the sand. And I was like, too soon, Brent Reeves. We can no longer be friends. I said, I'm still in the tree. The dust hadn't even settled from where that buck kicked up the leaves running off. And Brent's like, yeah, you're not very good when you have to think about it.
Well, hey, you know, he volunteered the information, Ryan.
Right, yeah. And like we said, you know, he could name the episode, you know, if he makes one out of it, missing this year's shooters this year.
Yeah, that's a good I like that.
We got a deal going here where, well, we should we tell the name of your podcast, Brent? I'm just kidding. No. Yeah. Yeah, the tagline of this podcast, missing this year's shooters this year. That's the inside joke. Well, no, so miss the bear, it's all a journey of traditional archery and the discipline of traditional archery. That's what I love about it. I mean, and so to me, that's just where I'm at. I want to do it with a trad bow. That being said, I'm going to Manitoba. I'm carrying a compound bow.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow, going to Manitoba. And the limiting factor is not, I don't want it to be the bow, you know, so I'm going to take it. But, man, Ryan, phone ringing. Citronella, Alabama.
No mosquitoes there.
No mosquitoes there.
Just got cancer.
Nah, so on the day that I shot my bear, I get a text on the Garmin InReach from Ryan, and he says, just shot a big one. And so on day five is when you killed your bear. Give us just a little rundown of the hunt.
Yeah, I'm trying
and
to brainstorm.
Hunt.
Was it the fifth day?
Well, I shot my bear on the fifth day, and you texted me while Brent and I were waiting at the boat.
I guess that's right, yeah.
It was the fifth day.
Since then. You know, the first day, he took me in there to a different bait, which I had my heart set going to where I was going to hunt the rest of the week, but went to this first bait and just seen, I think it was a younger sow, probably 200-pound sow that evening. It's the only bear I'd seen. But the next day, I asked him, you know, if we could go back to where I'd killed the year before. He said, absolutely, which was a lot longer boat ride. So I took plenty of pain meds for the boat ride to get there because the wind had been blowing. But no, just kidding. But, yeah, he took me to this bait. And before I could even get settled in the blind, a bear's coming in. And you know, that evening I'd seen, I don't know, three or four bears. One really nice, probably close to 300-pound boar come in right off the bat. And as I was sitting there and I'm trying to self-film, just over the knoll, here comes a big bear, a really big bear. Comes in, commits to the bait, and about 25 yards, and he just does not give me the right angle. But in the meantime, I've got this other boar circling within arm's reach. So I'm trying to shoot him, you know, out of the
while
blind.
You're looking over your shoulder because there's a bear trying to sniff you over here.
Yeah, I've got a whopper just right out front that I'm waiting to get broadside. And this other one's, you know, in my pocket. And I'm throwing sticks at him. But anyway, this bear, I never get a shot at. It ends up running a smaller bear off the bait and just kind of disappears for the evening. And which that first day was what, a day I hunted? Was that a Tuesday?
Monday. No. Monday was the first day.
Yeah, Monday was at the other bait. Tuesday, I didn't get a shot. Wednesday, that same bear come in.
The smaller bear.
No, the bigger bear. Man, I've messed my days up.
Yeah.
I don't remember. But anyway, I end up getting a shot at this bear I'd seen the day before, which was a big bear. And I end up whiffing, shoot right under him.
I forgot about that, Ryan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now we can talk about round missing with a compound bow.
And you know what's weird is everybody in camp just shot and shot and shot
every day.
You know, so everybody's dead on, and I don't know how, but I shot, you know, just low, and I was sick about it.
Hey, and let me just tell you, I was shocked when I heard that. I mean, Ryan grabbed it in the Miss Bears with a compound bow off the ground.
Yeah, it was. I was down and out, but he wasn't that scared. And what's worse than that is he ended up coming back in later that evening, and he stayed hid behind the barrel, wouldn't give me the right shot again. And finally he goes to mosey off at about 30 yards, broadside again. I shoot and shoot right under him, and I'm ready to
just go really drown good that we're going to end the podcast on this.
Yeah, this is great.
Yeah.
But, I forgot that.
Yeah.
I forgot it, too.
Yeah. I forgot you missed it twice. I remember you missed it.
I'm glad, because y'all haven't been giving me a hard time.
Oh, man. Round two starts today.
Yeah, but the I think it was the next day, wasn't there, maybe an hour, and a really nice bear comes right in. We'd actually moved the barrel up there just a hair closer to me. You know,
at 30.
I'm doubting myself, you know.
Yeah.
And but anyway, this other bear comes right in, does what I want him to, and I mean, I just center punched him. He actually ran a half circle behind me and died just dang near right where they pulled the boat up. But also, while this is going on, I'm filming the whole week, self-filming, and get all the spectacular footage. I shoot this bear, think, man, I've really done something, you know. And as I'm doing a little post-hunt interview there, I notice that the red dot's not
the old on red light.
The old red light.
And needless to say, I didn't get any of the kill shot.
Oh.
The bear coming in, the shot, anything, and I just...
It would have been a full episode of Bear Horizon.
Yeah,
you robbed the people.
I did. I did. I thought I'm leaving Canada without a scalp because you was going to take a hatchet to me.
Oh, man, it was like getting somebody kicking sand in your eyes when you were down.
Because
Ryan was like, I killed a big one. I was like, yes, at least we got one good bear. Ryan's filming. And then like 10 minutes later he said,
But
I didn't get it on film. Oh,
yeah, let's hear it for the cameraman.
I wish I had it
over, man. Your last year's video that you self-filmed has 120,000 views on YouTube.
Yeah.
There you go.
It was incredible.
Yeah, that was a good
Same spot.
Same spot.
Place, yeah.
Yeah.
Probably could have been some of the same bears you saw.
Might have been. The bear I ended up killing this year, you know, I had not seen that bear that whole week. You know, the previous 2 or 3 days.
Okay, so. See, I didn't realize that was a new bear. See, that's what's so unique about this kind of hunting is that we set on just a red-hot bait for 5 days and never saw just a whopper bear. You set on a red-hot bait, and there were 3 whopper bears. And by a whopper, you know, a 300-plus-pound spring bear is a big bear.
Yeah.
And the big one that you missed was probably in the 400-pound range.
Yeah, he was probably pushing 4.
Okay, pushing 4. Yeah, so, I mean, that's a monster spring bear.
Yeah.
Monster spring bear. And then the one you killed, how big you think it was?
I want to say it was 325. You know, time was winding down, and, I mean, it was a good bear.
It was a heck of a bear.
Right, and, you know, I just decided to see if I could miss that one, too. But
I ended up
hitting him right where I needed to.
Yeah. So... It was an awesome hunt. That Ryan was in his favorite little spot over there. Did really good, had a lot of action. And then the sixth day, final day, Brent was up to bat. And here was my deal: I shot that bear on the fifth day and actually had another full day to hunt. And I just didn't feel right about it. In Saskatchewan, I could have continued to hunt.
Yeah,
still had an unfilled tag. But I told Brent, I said, my hunt's over. I'm done. You're up to bat. And so Brent actually went in where you killed your bear. And I knew for sure we were going to get a bear. Oh, man.
I did too. I had a good feeling.
I had a great feeling. I mean, we had one full – I mean, all it takes up there is an afternoon.
And that bait had been destroyed from the day before.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. Yeah, it we sat for smashed. 6 hours and saw one bear that wouldn't even hardly come into the bait.
Yeah.
And so it's dark. Just – you just never know. So Brent got to hunt one day.
Yep.
And he could have shot this smaller bear that was there.
Yeah.
But it just wasn't what we were after.
Yeah. So let's go back.
We're going to have to go back, I guess. Brian didn't know if he's going to go.
About out of arrows.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to get some new arrows.
Yeah. Well, it was a phenomenal hunt, Bear Pro Safaris, Northern Saskatchewan, and we're probably gonna end up back there this year.
Yeah.
Some conglomeration of us. We're not sure. Ryan's not sure if he can go.
You know, what I'd like to say is there's nobody doing what Colby's doing up there that we're aware of. That's you know, a lot of these outfitters, you know, it's places that's baited year after year after year.
Right.
Some of them may not be that far from, you know, Access Road or something, but Colby takes you somewhere away from, you know, the norm and puts you on fresh bears, and he don't take no shortcuts. And
yeah.
You know, it's amazing what he does, the hard work that him and Dustin do. You know, I'm amazed at their woodsmanship and, you know, like I said, their work ethic. And, you know, there's nobody else I would go with up there, I don't think, that he spoiled me.
Yeah, yeah. Man, I have a ton of respect for all these bear outfitters. It's a tremendous amount of work. I mean, those guys are just made of steel.
Yeah.
They really are.
Yeah, they're purpose driven. You know, I was talking to a guy out in California about some bear hunting, about some filming stuff the other day, and this was before the Arkansas opener, and told him, you know, we had a bear bait going, and he put it pretty good when he said he couldn't think of any other hunt where you have more sweat equity and involved, invested in something than a baited bear hunt.
That's true.
And it is.
You know,
true.
I love all types of bear hunting. I love spot and stalk hunting in the West. I mean, there's just something special about it.
Yeah.
There's something special about hunting with hounds.
Always.
There's something special about hunting in these big woods the way we do. You couldn't really call it spot and stalk, but almost like spot and stalk.
Right.
But the hardest hunts that I do in terms of volume of work are baited hunts.
Oh, by far.
I mean, you know. And not taking anything away from a spot and stalk hunt takes a ton of skill. It's technical. You got to be in good shape. But, man, baited bear hunt's a lot of work.
You know, I've helped you a little bit in the past on a few baits, like right before I'd get in camp, you know, a couple of days early, and we would bait, you know, and I would film some stuff for you or maybe tote a little bait in or whatever. But this year when me and a friend of mine, we started that bait.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I really realized, man, this ain't nothing easy about
what
the easiest
what
thing,
I tell you.
Yeah. What he said, the dream is free, but
the dream is free. The hustle is sold separately.
That's right. I laughed for like 30 minutes over that. But it's true, you know. I mean, and it's you gotta stay on if you want it to work, you gotta stay on top of it. And
and
usually bears here, you gotta do some work to get to them. To get where they are. You can't just you know, drive up and throw a loaf of bread out. It's just going to take some logistics.
Yeah. You got to do a lot of things right to kill the older, mature boar over bait, especially in Arkansas and Oklahoma. I mean, that's the best way I can describe it, is that you got to do a ton of stuff right. You got to do a ton of stuff right.
Yeah, we about
a ton of work.
Almost destroyed a Polaris Ranger having to get into this place to get the bait. Just to get the barrel in there. I mean, it came out looking like something the Clampets were driving around when we got out of those mountains. It was terrible.
Well, that's where the bears are. You got to get to them places.
That's right.
Yep. It's all about location. Well, we'll have another podcast at some point with Ryan and maybe probably Brent too, but about Arkansas bears and about what we're doing and how we're targeting these bears. You know, bears are so cool because they're so diverse. I love hunting over bait, and I will never not love hunting over bait. I also
love going out in the mountains, national forest, and just hunting them one-on-one. I'm probably going to end up out in Tennessee later this fall hunting over hounds. I mean, they're such a diverse animal. They cover such a wide geographic range. They overlap so many different types of hunting cultures.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just such a unique, unique animal to be able to hunt. Whatever is happening ecologically in North America is beneficial to bears. You show me a bear population that's in decline, a black bear population that's in decline in North America.
Yeah, there ain't one.
They're just not. I mean, they're expanding every direction out of Arkansas into eastern Oklahoma, southern Missouri, western Mississippi, northern Louisiana, northeast Texas.
I grew up in southeast Arkansas, and if you wanted to see a bear, you had to drive a long ways away.
Yeah.
And I got a buddy who works for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service down in Felsenthal, National Wildlife Refuge. He wants to see a bear, he'll just go out and show you one.
They're covered in bears.
They're everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is a great time to be a bear hunter, you know. And I think for bears are kind of overlooked in some ways. And that's what we're trying to change here at Bear Hunting Magazine. And we're trying to educate people, too, about the conservation angle of this type of hunting. I mean, spring bear hunting is strategically happening during fawning times. Yeah. So you take a bear out of that population, that's one less bear that's going to be able to target a moose fawn or a caribou fawn or a whitetail fawn. I mean, we use the meat. I mean, bear meat is fantastic when it's handled and cooked correctly.
Yes.
We use the hide. We take the skulls. I mean, there's all these wildlife commodities. We render down the fat. There's all these things that we do with bear, and we're learning more every day. I mean, I've made it a mission in what I do to try to learn more about how to utilize this animal that we love, value, appreciate. And so you just can't be a bear hunter in 2018 and expect this to continue unless we're pretty darn educated,
right,
and even articulate. What I want to do with Bear Hunting Magazine and with this podcast and with our videos is to put words in people's mouths that they can then begin to say, and not that I'm the one that started it. I mean, somebody told me how to say it. But just this idea that if we want the bear hunt for charismatic megafauna, for big predators to continue in the politically correct, urbanized, civilized, concretized society that we now live in, we're going to have to get super smart. And even in this world of social media, which I don't have a good answer to, it'd probably be better if none of us ever put anything on the internet about bear hunting, but that's just not going to happen. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of like saying, well, it'd be better if nobody drove cars because people wouldn't die in car wrecks.
Yeah.
The ozone wouldn't be depleted. And it's like, well, we're too far steeped in blood. We can't not drive cars. The world knows we bear hunt, so we might as well get educated. And our goal is to put out some quality media that has a solid perspective on bear hunting.
And we want to portray it as it actually is, and the right way to what we think is the right way to do things.
Which, yeah.
For the species and the sport. Yeah, the species being first.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, hey, check out the Bear Hunting Magazine YouTube channel and watch this episode. It's going to be the most recent episode about Saskatchewan. I don't even know that. I hadn't even named it yet.
Swing and a miss.
Swing and a miss. Swing. Too soon, brother. But you'll be able to watch. You'll be able to watch this episode. Hey, check out our print magazine. Shameless plug. Man, we got an awesome print magazine. We're the only bear hunting magazine in the world. Only print bear hunting magazine in the world. And, you know, check it out. Subscribe. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Check out our YouTube channel. Man, keep the wild places wild, because that's where the bears live.